Daisy.
Daisy.
Midweek Movie Mumblings. Oh yes.
Hello and welcome to this, the Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings Oscars special. I know, very exciting stuff. The ceremony happened this Sunday in Los Angeles. In the UK, it aired from like 1 a.m. to like, I don't know, 5 a.m. And I was at my parents' house, so I did not stay up and watch it. However, I think it's always interesting to look at the Oscars, look at all these award ceremonies, see what films have been chosen to be elevated to the heights that they have been. And yeah, just generally go through them. It's going to be a slightly differently structured show to what you're usually used to on this here Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings. The way I'm going to do this, rather than go through each category, because I haven't seen every film, I know, what am I like? I haven't seen every film that got nominated, so I thought the best thing to do to make up for that would be to go through the films by most awarded to, like, least awarded, based on the ones I've seen, and kind of just discuss them, plus, like, talk about a couple of other films that I've seen that I'm really interested in. Basically, just going back through the films I've personally seen, from like most awarded to least awarded, and kind of talking about it. But just to give my general thoughts before we kind of properly jump into it, I'm genuinely really pleased with this year's Oscars. There was a lot of controversy in the run-up to it, which we'll discuss at length very shortly. But I was genuinely really pleased. A lot of the time, I feel like the Oscars are kind of just like a... you know, whoever had the most marketing budget for their sort of big tentpole arthouse film... is. And I don't know, the past few years have definitely felt like that, but this year I was very pleasantly surprised by the results, but we'll probably get into it in a minute. For now though, let me just remind you that if you're listening to this live as it goes out on Friday the 7th of March at 11 a.m, you can message in by going to www.camfm.co.uk/player, www.camfm.co.uk/player, and clicking on the little web form box, send me in a message there. Alternatively, if you're listening to this on the podcast or on catch up, thank you very much, first of all. And second of all, you can send me in a message by emailing me at dmmm@camfm.co.uk. That's dmmm@camfm.co.uk. Alternatively, you can message my Instagram at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix, which you should obviously be doing anyway. Like, come on now. Anyway, without further ado, though, enjoy the rest of the show. And yeah, let me know your thoughts. Okay, bye.
Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings on Cam FM.
Okay, so first things first, I think it's worth talking a bit about the politics of the Oscars. If you're not used to like hearing this kind of behind the scenes mode to it. First things first, I can only recommend in the strongest possible terms that you listen to the wonderful The Rest is Entertainment podcast. Marina Hyde, who is one of the correspondents on that alongside Richard Osman, does an incredible job of breaking down across multiple episodes the need for Oscar campaigning and what goes into the Hollywood machine behind gigging an Oscar, because it's not all of the glitz and glam that you might necessarily think. Behind every Oscar win is a tireless and relentless period of Oscar campaigning. It's not necessarily like, I could go out into the streets of Cambridge, shoot an amazing film guerrilla style with a handheld camera, and then just release it into a film festival, and then it immediately gets picked up for an Oscar. We do not live in that level of meritocracy, unfortunately. The film needs to have some level of backing behind it for it to even get considered for a nomination. So, you know, let's chart the journey of a film. So say I did go out into the streets of Cambridge and shot a film that was just the most incredible thing since, you know, the invention of sliced bread. Maybe it's a documentary on the invention of sliced bread. I don't know. Say I've just made this. It's incredible. Everyone's lauding it. I would have to then submit it after I've made it. I'd submit it to a bunch of festivals. Let's say we're flying ourselves into the big leagues now. Let's say I get picked up for Sundance and Cannes, okay? Unlikely, but let's say I do. From there on, that once you're kind of in those festivals, you're in the kind of proverbial running, okay? the buzz that your film gets from those festivals will then determine its journey into Oscar stardom. Say, I won the Palme d'Or, which one of our films that we're going to be talking about did. I got some other accolade like that kind of put my film on the map. I got a bunch of articles written about it. From that point on, you might then get picked up by a production house, a distributor. You might get picked up by any number of those. They're going to put your film into cinemas. They're going to, you know, gauge the popularity of it. They're going to gauge the popularity of my documentary about sliced bread and say it gets even more lauded. Everyone's going crazy over it, that kind of thing. Take The Brutalist, for example, which we're going to be talking about, which kind of had a very similar trajectory to that. Or Flow, which we're also going to be talking about, had an incredibly similar trajectory to that. From that point on, your distributor can then decide whether or not they want to campaign for you to win an Oscar. Then you start getting one of the preamble Oscar ceremonies, so the Golden Globes. Everyone uses the Golden Globes to predict kind of who's going to be up in the running for an Oscar, for example. But then we finally get to the ceremony. By the time you reach the ceremony, there are only like kind of 10, 15 films in the public consciousness that are like, oh yeah, that one's definitely going to get nominated for an Oscar. That's why. It's because it's all part of a very carefully coordinated attack plan by these distributors, by these marketing agencies, by these awards consultancy firms, because yes, they actually have those in Hollywood. Here at CamFM, it's just me, but there you go. Who, like, basically their job is to put your film in front of as many Oscar voting eyes as possible. The Academy is made up of, I don't even know how many, a bunch of Lifetime members who get to pick and choose who they vote for. Now, this is where it gets slightly interesting with this year's ceremony, because, you know, it's controversy time. Many of you will be aware of the film Emilia Perez, which is a slightly controversial number. It's basically about a sort of Mexican drug overlord who undergoes gender reassignment surgery, and also Zoe Saldana's in it. That's basically as much as I know about it. I haven't seen it because I'm kind of boycotting it. But, that's neither here nor there. This film was massively controversial because of a number of comments that both the lead actress, Carla Sofia Gascon, made, as well as the director, who basically made a bunch of very disparaging comments about Mexican culture and Mexican actors. Everyone said the film was a bit pants. I've not seen it, as I say, but I have seen some of the musical numbers, and I will say that our correspondent, who will be joining us later, Oliver, has seen it and thought it was okay. But there you go. I don't know. I who am I to judge? That was a film of massive controversy. No one particularly wanted it to win Best Picture or anything like that. It was kind of seen as this year's Crash. Crash being the film from 2005, I'm going to say. Which was very similar. It was very much considered Oscar bait. We're not going to get into what Oscar bait is here. You can look that up. It's basically just any film that's incredibly pretentious and hits a bunch of kind of like very plotted out puts it in front of Oscar voters and makes it sort of considerable for an Academy Award. The most famous example of it being Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which is the film with Tom Hanks in it, I believe. Yes. Anyway, that aside, bit of a tangent. That aside, it was definitely Emilia Perez, which was the subject of the most controversy this year. Interestingly, I've not really seen this at a ceremony before. It basically sweeped the Golden Globes. It was very much after the Golden Globes, it was in line to win Best Picture. It was in line to win pretty much everything at the Oscars. The Oscar nominations came out in very short order after that. And as everyone was expecting, it got nominated for like, I think it's the most highly nominated film, not in the English language. It beat out Parasite for that accolade. I mean, which is insane. But anyway, it was, you know, this huge thing. And very interestingly, then all of the tweets made by the lead actress came out and they were all not very nice. We're not going to get into them here, but oh my God, there's some choice ones in there. And everyone basically, that immediately knocked her out of the running for Best Actress, which is a shame because obviously it would have been amazing to see a trans woman win that award. But obviously I have read these tweets, okay? Yeah, no, Anyway, also haven't seen Emilia Perez, and I will say that the nominees otherwise in the category of Best Actress were pretty amazing. We'll get into it later, but yeah, there you go. All of this to say, Emilia Perez from that point on, and I at this point, I wasn't aware that the Academy Awards hadn't been voted on yet. They just had the nominations. So the votes for the Oscars happened after the tweets were released, which I think you can very easily read into the actual results of the ceremony itself. Because I was in my head, I was like, well, she's definitely won it, because they would have, so the Academy has the ability to revoke a nomination from someone, you know, if, say, for example, they tweeted a bunch of not very nice things. The fact that the Academy didn't do that immediately made me suspicious that she had actually won it. However, I wasn't aware at that time that the Academy actually hadn't voted on who to nominate. And when I, well, who to win the Oscars, they had already voted on who to nominate. And when I found that out, I was like, this is really interesting. And as I suspected, the entire order of winners that everyone very strongly suspected kind of got turned on its head. You kind of saw in the last couple of weeks before the Oscars, everyone completely reevaluate their sort of hit list of who they thought was going to win in each category, which I thought was really funny. And that's kind of what's led to this situation where I'm pretty happy with the results as a whole. We'll get into it in a minute. But yeah, there you go. Anyway, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the politics of the Oscars and say a little thing. I've read a lot of things online about shaming people for their awards. We'll get into it. You know, your favourite didn't win in a category, blah, blah, blah. I am slightly biased because the one film I definitely wanted to win, Flo, did win. So I'm slightly biased, being like, peace and love, guys. But what I will say is that the Oscars is so incredibly based on campaigning and advertising, and it is not a meritocracy at the end of the day. Your favourite film might have, if we fed it all into a supercomputer, might have been empirically the best work of art that was produced that year, and it didn't win. That's because the Oscars is not a meritocracy. Also, I kind of, you know, it's flawed, but I kind of love it for that. You know, the whole point of an awards ceremony is it's the opinions of the judges on the panel at the time. I mean, you know, hey, I should have won gold for best presenter. But anyway, but you know what I mean? The whole point is that it's not a meritocracy. It's basically the judges, they've seen what they've seen at the end of the day. It's annoying. It's you know, ugh. But at the end of the day, we're all human, right? And how boring would it be if we just had a ceremony being like, right, we've fed all these films into a supercomputer and these are empirically the best ones. No one would watch that, okay? So whilst I think there is plenty to criticise about the Oscars, for example, I would get rid of the whole Oscar campaigning thing. It should be much more meritocracy based. But I still think it's what we've got at the end of the day. And I think going alongside the actual results, I actually really enjoy talking about the politics and the controversies of the Oscars, as you can tell by the fact I've been nattering for 10 minutes about this. But there you go. I just wanted to say a little bit about that. And yeah, let's get into the actual winners, shall we? Oh, yes.
And the Oscar goes to... Are they playing us off?
No. Oh. Well, maybe. Oh, Anora.
Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, Anora has won 5 Oscars tonight. For original screenplay, film editing, directing, actress in a leading role, and best picture.
Well, I mean, really, what more needs to be said there? Anora sweeping the Academy Awards. Definitely won the most Oscars of the night, 5, as Nick Offerman very eloquently said in his little voiceover there. Including 4 for Sean Baker, okay? This is it's the most Oscar wins for a single person for the same film in the same night. The reason I say it, you know, quite that, I don't know, what's the word? You know what I mean. I don't know. It's a bit of a far-off thing. The reason I say that is because it's technically tied for the most Oscars won in one night, which is a much more pithy title to win. It's tied for that with Walt Disney. So pretty good company to be in terms of winning awards there. Sean Baker, incidentally, who I follow on Letterboxd before this happened. Okay, the man is a prolific film watcher. I can't keep up. Anyway, Anora, we already spoke about this film, just saying, on Days of Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings during our Cambridge Film Festival special edition, which you can find on podcast form or on catch up. That was a really fun episode. I'd seen 18 films in like a week, and Anora was one of my highlights from the festival, one of my 5 stars. I was very happy with this win. I didn't want it going to Emilia Perez. I'm boycotting it. I haven't seen it, but I just don't like the kind of callousness behind it. And based on what I've read of the director's comments and of the lead actress's comments, it's not a film I particularly want to see, nor that I was particularly interested in seeing win at Best Picture. The other nominees in this category, it was a stacked category. I mean, Conclave was in there. And as you very well will know, if you're a regular listener to the show, we're a big fan of Conclave. Sandy Toksvig is not a big fan of Conclave, as we discovered on our interview. You can find that on CamFM Trending if you are so inclined. I've seen that film 3 times in the cinema. I really enjoy it every single time. I read the book. It was incredible. I was about to say Robert Graves. No, it was actually Robert Harris. My God. I looked over to my bookshelf and then I forgot I actually lent out the book because I loved it so much. But so the category was stacked for Best Picture, but I do think Anora, at the end of the day, deserved the win. It was an incredibly fantastic film. Again, I don't want to get too much into my thoughts on the film itself because it's so incredible. I've already talked about it at length on this show. As Sean Baker says at the end of his speech, you know, long live indie film. And I think this really epitomizes that. One thing I did want to say about the broader sweep of awards that this won was Best Leading Actress, which was given to Mikey Madison, who rather horrifyingly is the first Gen Z, member of the Gen Z generation to win Best Actress, which means, gosh darn it, that's another accolade I can't, you know, that's no longer within reach. Damn you, Mikey Madison. I mean, I don't think I was particularly in pole position to win that anyway, but you know what I mean. Do you know what I mean when, like, someone is, like, really successful and they're, like, the same age as you and you're like, darn, you know, what have I been doing with my life? Sitting in front of Audacity? Anyway, who knows? Getting a degree from Cambridge, I'll have you know. Anyway, although that's, you know, not going hugely... you get what I mean. Anyway, the point is, I wanted to talk about Best Leading Actress because I've seen a lot of vitriol online about the fact that Demi Moore did not win in this category. And for this, again, I can only so strongly point you in the direction towards Marina Hyde on The Rest Is Entertainment, who puts it better than I think anyone else could, in that the Academy should not be there to give lifetime achievement role trophies in lieu of, like, a Best Actress trophy. That sounds a bit harsh, but I personally think that I've seen The Substance. It was one of my favourite films from last year. I absolutely loved it. I'm a huge body horror gal. You know me. So I was a big fan of it. I loved how on the nose it was. Again, we're not there to get into it. I don't think it was a better film than Anora, though. So even though it was also nominated for Best Picture, I don't think it necessarily should have won Best Picture. In lieu of Anora, just from my personal perspective. And I also don't think that Demi Moore did a better performance than Mikey Madison. Mikey Madison's performance in Anora is genuinely incredible. It's insane. The fact that she's so young, she's literally like 2 years, 3 years older than me, and she's able to do that is insane, okay? Everyone, I've seen a lot of very disparate, like incredibly reductionist takes calling Anora a quote-unquote porn film. That must be from either someone who has watched it and just didn't understand what they were watching, or people who haven't watched it, because it is so much more than that. It's so incredible, and it really upsets me to see a lot of people disparaging a really incredibly talented young female actress just because their favourite didn't win. Like, this is not the feminism that you guys think it is. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, Demi Moore, look, she should win an Oscar at some point. I mean, whether that is a Lifetime Achievement Award Oscar, whether that is a Best Actress Oscar, that's besides the point. I think she's an incredible actress. I do not think she should have won it this year because, as I say, I think Mikey Madison did the better performance. Another interesting contender in this category was Fernando Torres for I'm Still Here, which I saw the other day, and it made me cry quite a lot. It was another film I gave 5 stars. But still, I think that Mikey Madison kind of triumphed in this category, and this is one of the categories where I'm like, yeah, you know what, out of the nominees, I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen every single film that came out, maybe there was a better performance out there, but in out of the nominees that were put forward for Best Actress, we do live in a meritocracy, in my personal opinion, because I think Mikey Madison by far and away absolutely chomped and gagged in that category. Sean Baker as well, I think, definitely deserved the wins in his you know, specific categories. Big up him. You know, I really rated it, and I think Sean Baker is a director with such an interesting voice, and seeing him finally reach the kind of acclaim he deserves is so amazing. I mean, before this point, he'd sort of, I believe he hadn't even really been nominated for an Oscar before this point. And just seeing him stride to the front of kind of art house visionary directors in such style is a really wonderful thing to see. And yeah, I can't wait to see what more we have from him. I mean, maybe this is his magnum opus. I mean, what a way to go out, 5 Oscars. But you know, hey, I think this was a great film and I think it deserved its wins in all of the categories, as mentioned there previously by the wonderful Nick Offerman. Also, go and watch the clip online, because one of my favourite human beings on the entire planet is John Lithgow. And John Lithgow is like sat on the row in front of the Anora like squad. And it's really funny. I love him because he kind of stands up and he's like, oh my God, I'm like right in the middle of the thick of it. Oh my God, oh my God. And he just kind of, he's just so lovely and I love it. And I would recommend giving that clip a watch because it's just very wholesome. Anyway, on to our next film, Zer.
And the Oscar goes to... Flo.
Flo.
This is the first Oscar win and nomination for this producing team. Gintz Zilbalotis, Matisse Kaja, Ron Dyance, and Gregory Zaltzman. Flo becomes the third animated film to be nominated for International Feature Film, and the second animated film to be nominated for both Animated Feature and International Feature Film.
Right, this is where I get emotional about this film. I genuinely watching for the 40 billionth time that announcement get made as I was recording for this show. You can kind of hear it in my voice. A tear came to my eye. So much is my love for this film. Gintz Zilbalotis directing Flo. We have spoken again, like Anora, we've spoken about this film many a time, again on the Cambridge Film Festival show. Hey, I saw a lot of great films there, what can I say? And this film made me so... It was one of the most powerful films I've seen, at least in the last 5 years. It's so beautiful, it's so wonderful. The animation style is absolutely gorgeous, and it doesn't say a single word of dialogue. I mean, come on, like, what the hell? If you haven't seen this film, please make it your absolute mission to watch it. Watch it. I would say watch it in the cinema, but honestly, watch it in a quiet environment, because in the cinema I watched it in, even though it was this incredibly spellbinding experience, cinema I watched it in, everyone was being really loud and annoying the whole time. So it kind of took away from the magic. I will be seeing it the moment it comes out in cinemas again in the UK. I saw it back in November and it still stayed with me this long. In fact, the director's previous film, Strome, which is Away in Latvian, which was the film that came out before this, didn't have nearly the same level of reach. But... is apparently equally as amazing, is also coming out in cinemas, at least in my local cinema around that time. So I'm going to be watching that and hopefully reviewing that on this show. But genuinely, I can't wax lyrical about how beautiful this film is and how incredibly pleased I was to see it win in this category. Again, we'll be hearing from our Oscar correspondent, Oliver, later. But the one thing I said to him was that I really, 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 really hope that Flo wins Best Animated Feature. If it won Best... I didn't think it was going to win Best International. The competition there was stark, but if it won there, my God, it deserved it. I mean, this quite frankly, I felt like it should have been nominated for Best Picture, in my humble opinion. But again, that's just I am slightly biased. And my fave did win, so hey, what can I say? The reason I was particularly invested in this category as well is also because I'm a massive hater, because another film nominated in this category, which everyone thought was going to win in this category, was The World Robot, which I just thought was the most bland piece of toast. It was like, it was what Flo wanted to be, okay? It's very beautifully animated. Searingly wonderful in the amount of effort that it took to render, okay, The World Robot, and the art design is beautiful, etc., etc., but it's so bland, it's so boring. The plot is literally like, and I hate to say this because it's a very overused piece of criticism, but it's genuinely like a ChatGPT generated, you know, make me a children's film. If I was 3 years old, I might have enjoyed it more. I just thought it was so annoyingly on the head, and I had that very like American thing of like they always have the peppy character who's like, great Scott, dude, we've got to like, you know, find the way to get to, you know, and it's just like filled with all these like cuddly mascots, which you can tell that the directors were like, oh my God, these are gonna be the money makers, guys. And every time I saw it in cinemas, it was like trying to do this thing that Flo did completely earnestly, where it would just be like behind the scenes and all this, and you know, the director's viewpoint and things like that. And it's like, this is a massive studio corporate film, they're trying to take on the trappings of an indie film like flow in order to boost their kind of level of acclaim, which really annoyed me. And again, I'm so pleased that Flo won, especially since I really just despised the Wild Robot's plot and writing. Again, the animation of the Wild Robot kind of brings it to a, like an average film, like it's nice to look at, but like if it won, my faith would have been crushed, and I would have had a much more dire take on the politics of the Oscars at the beginning of this show than I did. But the fact that Flo won, Flo, by the way, being the most indie film of indie films, it was made entirely in Blender, okay, which is an open source free animation and sculpting software. It was made on like a proper shoestring budget, very small animation team from Latvia. This is Latvia's first ever Oscar win, can I just say? I mean, what is there not to love? Hello. Also, Gintzil Belodis, one of my favourite humans on planet Earth, his Instagram is incredible, please go check it out. They both, him and his directing chum, they both wore like suits with the, and the inside had the little cat from the film in it. This is, I wanted also to say this, that reminds me, the main character in this film, this is partly why I love it so much, the main character in this film is a black cat, okay? If you listen to my main show, Days of Magical Mystery Mix, you'll be aware that my cat, who I've had for the last... well, my entire life, as long as basically my longest living memory, died recently, called Totty. She was 19 years old and she was also a black cat who looked very similar to the cat in Flo. And seeing Flo, I think that's partly why the film struck such a chord with me. I mean, Totty was still alive when I watched it, but it did remind me so much of her. And when she died, it was obviously so heartbreaking. But then seeing like Flo win an Oscar, when that film touched me so much because of my relationship with my cat, A lot of emotions. If only I was awake to see it happen. But again, I was at my parents' house and I wanted to get some sleep. But yeah, I just wanted to wax lyrical about Flo for a bit, because it was definitely my favourite film of last year, and it was definitely my favourite award of the night. I think Anora absolutely should have won Best Picture in that like level, in the nominations, in the categories it was nominated for. I just wanted to give a massive shout out to Flo for being amazing as per usual, and to implore you in the strongest possible terms to watch it. Also, hey, I ordered the soundtrack on vinyl, let's go. So hopefully you'll be hearing some more of that on the main show as well. Okay, right, on to our next film. Bye.
And the Oscar goes to Conclave, Peter Strong.
This is the first Oscar win and second nomination for Peter Strong. He was nominated for his adapted screenplay for Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy.
Yes, well, I had to talk about it a little bit. I haven't seen The Brutalist, so hey. This was OMG, Conclave's first win and only win at the Oscars last night, which I think is a shame. I think Ralph Fiennes should have won Best Act Leading Actor over Adrian Brody, but again, I haven't seen The Brutalist, but like, you know, I'm just saying, if you need AI to do a Hungarian accent, that's kind of on you. But also, like, I know Oliver really loved The Brutalist, I haven't seen it, so I'm a bit biased, but anyway. Conclave, Best Adapted Screenplay. Now, I bring this up because A, I really love Conclave, and B, I actually read the book, so I loved the film so much. I actually went back and read the original book by Robert Harris, which I feel like gives me an insight into the script of Conclave that not many other people will have, okay? Just saying, maybe not even the Academy voters. Whoa, am I saying that? Yes, I am. Not everyone's going to be reading a book before they, you know, they're not all reading the books for the adapt. You get what I mean. Anyway, so Conclave. First of all, the screenplay for the original film is fantastic. The film itself is fantastic. Again, I don't want to talk too much about it because we have spoken about it at length on this show before. I love it. I've seen it 3 times. Friend of the show, Clay, has seen it 9 times. So, you know, there's that. Sani Toksvig, also friend of the show. Not a huge fan, but that's okay. You know, we live and let live. But yeah, Conclave, the screenplay is amazing. It's a thriller about the Pope dying and the election of a new Pope. And it's just so wonderfully done. It's so tense. The pacing is immaculate. The kind of the line delivery, I mean, from the actors as well, but just from the like script itself, like the punchiness of that script and that dialogue really aids in that kind of incredibly tense feeling. You heard this bit of the soundtrack just then. I think that the soundtrack should have definitely won over Dune. Just saying. Actually, I'm not sure Dune won. I'll check that in a minute. But I definitely think that Conclave should have won. And that I had my own personal list of which ones, if I was the one who got to decide all the Oscar categories, could you imagine who would win? And I thought Conclave should have won in sound. You heard a bit of the sound in that little clip I just played for you. Just genuinely wonderful. But you know, best adapted screenplay. Hey, I'll take it. You know. Also, such a wonderful winner. As as you mentioned, as Nick Offerman mentioned in his voiceover, previously nominated for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is another film I haven't seen, but I really want to read the book, John le Carré. I refer you back to The Rest Is Entertainment, who referred to this as a true British win. I mean, obviously, say, if Wallace and Gromit had won in Best Animated Feature, which I don't think it should have done, and I'm really glad that Float won, but it's that kind of, you know, hey, you know, we here in the topsy-turvy land of England and Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland, we can make good films too. And you know, I think that it was a really good showing for the night, and I think that Conclave bringing that home was really nice. Also, the clip of Peter going up on stage to collect the award is so wholesome, because he just goes through again, John Lithgow is on a different row. I don't know where they seated him, but anyway, he walks through the row and he gives Ralph Fiennes a big hug. It's just so wonderful to see, and just going through the actors, just give it a watch if you haven't already. It's really nice to see, and it's really nice to see as well when it's a category that, like, the film isn't necessarily thought of as, like, the absolute definitely going to win in that category, if you get what I mean. Like, seeing those incredible reactions from people who genuinely didn't expect to win. I mean, again, going back to Flo, it was really wonderful. They obviously weren't expecting to win it, and they just all, like, are so overwhelmed. And if there's a video I can strongly recommend you enough to watch, it's Gintzel Bolotis with his dog reacting to the live stream of the Oscar nominations being announced. It's so wholesome. But anyway, sorry, I'm going to stop talking about Flo. I promise. Maybe. But Conclave, again, as I say, the book itself, Clay, my friend who has seen the film 9 times, read the book first and told me that the fact that Conclave won in Best Adapted Screenplay was really funny, because it's literally ripped, like, line by line from the book. I do agree with that. Like, when you read the book, it's really funny, because you're going through and you're like, oh my God, I remember that from the film, which is really fun. But I will say, it still stands on its own legs. Like, I mean, the two mediums, so the book and the film, they really are incredible, and they shine through in their respective mediums so much. Like, in the book, you see a lot more of Cardinal Lomley, Cardinal Lawrence in the film, Ralph Fiennes. You see a lot more of his internal dialogue. But that's because that's the merits of reading a book, right? You get to see a character's internal thoughts and feelings. Whereas in the film, they so beautifully navigate around that in the screenplay by just having these incredibly quiet, reflective moments with Ralph Fiennes just in his room. And it's not, there's no, like, voiceover, there's no, like, you know, him in the background being like, that's the moment I realised we were in a sticky situation, that kind of thing. It's so beautifully done, and I can't think of a more deserving winner, and I just, again, wanted to give a massive shout out to the wonderful Conclave. So yeah, there we go. And the Oscar goes to a bunch of other people who I want to talk about in this kind of miscellaneous category. Call it the ablative absolute in Latin. That was a really nerdy joke, and only some of you are going to get it, but this is the miscellaneous win category. Oh yeah. Nick Offerman, eat your heart out. So yeah, I just wanted to, sorry, I have my microphone's over here because I moved it because I had a cup of tea, because that's the level of professionalism we're working with. I just wanted to talk about some of the films that didn't necessarily fit into a large category of film I wanted to talk about, that being Anora and Flo and Conclave. But I still wanted to give them a little shout out. First and foremost, Kieran Culkin winning Best Supporting Actor for his role in the wonderful A Real Pain. Yes. I was about to say I'm Still Here, but no, it's A Real Pain. Yes, I'm losing track of my films and my miscellaneous category. Can you tell the level of professionalism we're working with? I saw this film again as part of the Cambridge Film Festival. A lot of amazing films in that festival, what can I say? And I really loved it. It was very beautiful. It was very understated in its presentation. It's directed by Jesse Eisenberg. Interesting, you know, there is now an Oscar-winning Jesse Eisenberg directed film. There you go. But it's basically a film about two cousins who go on a journey around their grandma's old house in the backdrop of the kind of Holocaust, and seeing the kind of places that she had to be exposed to as a child, which sounds very dark, but it's so funny. It's like a dark, I don't want to call it a dark comedy, because that gives a certain, you know, it's a very understated, very gentle, but also quite hard-hitting film about grief and about coming to terms with someone you've lost, and also kind of living in the legacy of a tragedy such as the Holocaust sort of thing. And it's an incredibly well-done film, not least. And I think the reason, I mean, it was kind of, for me, Kieran Culkin winning in this category was one of the ones where it was like, okay, this is going to happen, because he won at the Golden Globes and things like that. But when you see the film, it makes so much sense. Like, yes, he's very much still playing Kieran Culkin, but It has his performance has this beautiful depth to it that really portrays the character he's playing. His character really does drive the whole film forward. I mean, obviously Jesse Eisenberg's character is quite crucial to the plot as well, but like in terms of like what actually happens and in terms of the reflections and in terms of what the film's trying to go for, his character is so crucial. And I genuinely mean when I say that I don't think a single other actor could have played that role. And at the end of the day, isn't that what the best actor Oscar is? Hello. So I just wanted to, you know, give a massive shout out to that. And I mean, not that it needs it. It's just won an Academy Award, his performance. But I think it's a wonderful film with a wonderful performance in it, and you should definitely give it a watch. Also, all of the memes about Jeremy Strong also getting nominated in this category and the Succession thing about I'm the biggest boy, I'm the eldest boy were very funny, can I just say? Anyway, another film I want to talk about in my kind of miscellaneous category was The Brutalist. I haven't seen The Brutalist yet, but I wanted to mention it because obviously Adrian Brody won the Oscar for Best Actor and gave the longest Oscar speech in the history of Oscar speeches, to the point where the big band starts playing him off and he goes, I'm not finished, and keeps going. That's probably what's going to happen with my dissertation if I have to do a Viva. I'm just going to be like, I'm not finished, and just keep going. Anyway, this is a film I've chosen. I originally was going to watch, and then all of the AI stuff came out about it, and I was a bit like, I don't really want to support a film that uses AI, I'm not going to lie, but I kind of feel like it is so worth, it's worth watching. I mean, not least because Oliver, who we'll be hearing from later, it's literally one of his favourite films ever, and he's like seen it a gajillion times, and I'm like, okay, fine. But also because it does, it's really nice to see a film that represents such a singular vision be represented on the big screen. Like, this film took so many years for the director to actually make, and I do really appreciate seeing those kind of like massive artistic projects, like what Nora was really, come to the big screen and be celebrated in this way. I've also heard some controversy about the plot of The Brutalist, particularly in the main character that Adrian Brody plays. I'm not going to get into it here. There are some incredibly interesting deep dives into that from people who are qualified in both brutalism and architecture to talk about it and its kind of links with fascism and things like that. And I'd recommend going to watch some of those. So I haven't seen it yet, but I just wanted to mention it, and because I feel like it's a bit of the elephant in the room if I don't mention it. But the reason I haven't mentioned it is because I just haven't seen it. It's like 4 billion years long, and I'm meant to be doing a degree, and yet I'm sat in my room recording an hour-long special about the Oscars. Like, hey. Anyway, so I just wanted to give that a mention as well. Also, I wanted to give a little shout out to some of the technical categories. These are the categories, the art and technical direction categories, because these are the categories that like everyone kind of like brushes over a little bit. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say brush over, but like a lot of them kind of get swept under the rug. Like cinematography, for example, also went to The Brutalist, which, you know, hey, interesting. Fair enough. I haven't seen it. I can't really comment. Best film editing went to Anora as well. I mean, amazing. Again, Sean Baker, who just did literally everything, was so hands-on with it. Just seeing like someone sweep in that with that kind of singular vision, I think is so incredibly wonderful, etc., etc. But yeah, some other categories. Oh yeah, costume design. I'm talking about these kind of smaller categories here, by the way. Costume design went to Wicked. I think it should have gone to Conclave. The other nominees in this category were a complete unknown. Conclave, Gladiator 2, and Nosferatu. I've only seen Wicked, Conclave, well, I've seen all of them apart from one. Okay, that's not, you know, what I'm saying. Anyway, but Wicked, I do think the costume design in Wicked was amazing. It's amazing to see it pick up an Oscar, because again, I think a lot of people criticize the Oscars for not representing the kind of will of the people, as it were, like not representing the films that everyone wants to see. And I mean, there was that whole controversy. This is really interesting if you don't know about this. Look it up if you haven't. There was this whole controversy a couple of years ago because the Oscars wanted to introduce a category called like Best Popular Film, or like Best Box Office Film, which was going to be for your like Marvels, your Wickeds, your Barbies and things like that. But then obviously there was such a huge backlash to it because everyone was like, we already have Best Picture, but it's already so stuffed with art house films. I mean, I kind of like the fact it's stuffed with art house films. The point being, I think that Wicked picking up an Oscar is really nice to see. But I do think it should have gone to Conclave because, oh my god, those costumes were beautiful. I kind of want to become a pope, except I can't because I'm a woman. But you know what I mean. Anyway, I also wanted to give a massive shout out to Best International Feature. I'm Still Here. Again, I saw it the other day and I cried. Tears, honey, tears were flowing. And I absolutely loved that film. It was so beautiful. And I do think that Fernando Torres put in an incredible performance. Again, I do think that Mikey Madison just pipped her to the post. And I think I am happy that Mikey Madison won in that category for Best Actress. But seeing I'm Still Here still get recognised for being the incredible, heartfelt and gut-wrenchingly beautiful film it is was still wonderful, because my God, that film made me cry so much. Also, finally, I wanted to give a shout out to June Part 2, won 2 Oscars. I saw it twice last year. It won, I do believe... Oh! I didn't realise that The Substance won Makeup and Hairstyling. Shout out! I wanted it to win a Makeup and Hairstyling. Nice one. Anyway, sorry. I wanted to give a quick shout out to June Part 2. I mean, again, the most obsessively rewatched film from last year. Got Best Sound and Best Visual Effects. Deserved, all I can say. I saw it twice in the cinema. I really didn't like the first June film, and then the second June film kind of felt like it put all of it together. I kind of understand that, because, you know, it's obviously such a huge book and it's hard to translate into, you know, film. Just look at Hodorowski's Dune documentary if you want more on that. But I just think it's really interesting to see, again, these big tentpole films still get recognised in the technical categories. By talking about Dune, it gives me an excuse to use my wonderful Dune-flavoured jingle that I made for my show when I talked about Dune Part 2 way back when last year. So yeah, enjoy this. Bye!
Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings on Cam FM.
Finally, of course, we have our correspondence from our Oscar watcher-in-chief, Oliver, who actually stayed up to watch the entire ceremony. I know, can you believe it? It was very funny because I woke up at about 6 to get my train back to Cambridge from my parents' house, and he was messaging me at like 5 a.m. when the ceremony ended, and I was like, hey, how was it? You know, I saw Flo won, yay! Just looked up the results, and then he like messaged me back like an hour later being like, yeah, it was good, but I could tell he was very tired and, you know, slightly dead. But hopefully he's had time to collect his thoughts together, and yeah, take it away, Oliver.
Well, hello. Thank you so much to Daisy for having me back. I'm sure she's introduced me, but I'm Oliver, and I'm your live correspondent for the 97th Academy Awards held on Sunday evening. This is my my 12th year watching the show. I'm a bit of an Oscars nut, and I keep track of statistics and precursors and all sorts of fun things. And I'm going to join you and give some thoughts. And I've got to say a big thanks to Daisy for not wanting to record this earlier in the week. I slept for 90 minutes on after the Oscars and then went straight into work. So I'm glad I could get a bit of rest and give you some thoughts. Now, obviously, the big winner of the night was Anora, taking home 5 Oscars: picture, director, actress, original screenplay and editing. And honestly, I don't have much of a problem with that. I was a big fan of Anora. Saw it at the London Film Festival. I've seen it a couple of times since. I think it's really great, and I think it will age really well as a Best Picture winner. I am surprised to see Sean Baker sort of get his flowers at this point in his career. I didn't think he really necessarily would do. But one absolute treat it was to have him in his acceptance speech for Best Director talk about the power and importance of theatrical distribution. Hugely popular in the room. Even I, who wasn't wanting him to win that category, even I stood up in my room and gave a bit of a cheer, because that was a real standout moment. I think Anora in general perhaps was slightly over awarded. I think 5 Oscars probably was a bit too many, but I'm a big fan of the film, and I think it will go down as a pretty good Best Picture winner, especially compared to some of the other ones we've had recently. Now, the second biggest winner of the night was Brady Corbet's The Brutalist. Now, this Daisy's probably a bit sick of me banging on about this, but this is my personal favourite film of 2024. And at the Oscars, it won Best Actor for Adrien Brody, Original Score and Cinematography. All, in my book, exceptionally well-deserved awards. It was truly beautiful, incredible, sort of world-beating stuff to me, especially the 3 aspects of it that were garlanded that night. I was super delighted to see them rewarded. And even if Adrian's speech perhaps ran a little long, you know, all power to him. He's up there and he wanted to take his time doing it. And he did so, or he really did so. But it's an astonishing film that tells a really important, powerful story about the kind of darkness at the heart of America. And it explodes the sort of myths of the founding of America and the American dream. And I would highly, highly recommend it to everyone. Now, a couple of other ceremony highlights. What an absolute treat it was to see I'm Still Here beat Emilia Perez. I don't think I need to delve into the controversy any further, but I will just say that that is hugely well-deserved. And Fernanda Torres would have been my personal pick for Best Actress, but it was a real delight to see that film garlanded, and I would highly encourage everyone to go and look at some reaction videos of Brazilians watching that category, because they are glorious. Another personal favourite that I have no doubt Daisy will have mentioned already is Flo winning Animated Feature. That is a fantastic win, because not only do I think it is the best film in that category, but I think it also really marks a sort of a collaboration of just the most impressive use of free online available software and just a couple of determined people who managed to put it all together. And it really marks a shift in the Academy's taste in the Best Animated Feature category. In the last few years, they've had Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, The Boy and the Heron, and Flo. All that would have been kind of outside bets in other years, I think. Losing to big Disney films or Pixar. And I'm a huge fan of this, and I want to see them branch out even further. A couple of other winners that I would really recommend. Two of the short films, which don't get talked about anywhere nearly enough. In the Shadow of the Cypress, that won Best Animated Short, which is a really impressively made and sort of told story about PTSD that is, I highly recommend to everyone. And the short film I'm Not a Robot, which won Live Action Short. A real surprise. No one was really expecting that. But it's available on YouTube, and I would encourage everyone to go and take a look. That's a fun one. And just to finish up, a couple of non-winners that I would, you know, suggest that everyone see if they can. The documentary Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat, that is perhaps the best feat of editing I've seen in years. It makes fantastic use of archival footage in such a unique and just powerful way. It's really something. And another one a little like that is the film Incident, a short film nominated for Best Documentary Short. That is also available on YouTube, and I think it is the film from this year that everyone should see. It's only 30 minutes. It's heartbreaking, but it's necessary viewing for everybody, and I would encourage everyone to check that one out. But yeah, I think overall this was a pretty good Oscars. There were some really good winners. Most of the speeches were watchable. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the absolutely awful James Bond tribute that we didn't really need and was badly sung, but I'll just finish off by saying I think Conan did a great job, and I'm no fan of Wicked, but Ariana and Cynthia were great, and I'm kind of looking forward to the sequel. Yeah, that's a bit of a surprise, but yeah, so thanks again, Daisy, for having me, and I'll be back on soon. Cheers.
Well, thank you very much for that. And hey, here's this.
Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings on Cam FM.
Well, guys, thank you yet again. Thank you. My God. Yeah, thanks. I mean, it wasn't me who won the Oscar, am I right? Anyway, although I should have. Hey, what for? Nobody knows. Sound, maybe? Probably not. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this incredibly long episode of Days of Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings, where I mumbled about the Oscars for about 50 minutes. And thank you very much to my special in-person correspondent, Oliver Barlow, for joining me to discuss his thoughts on the ceremony. Yeah, if you have any thoughts, please do get in touch. You can email me via dmmm@chemfm.co.uk. That's dmmm@chemfm.co.uk. Or indeed, you can message me via my Instagram at Days of Magical Mystery Mix to keep up with my latest broadcast of both my live music and entertainment show that goes out at 6 p.m. live every Saturday. And indeed, my episodes of Days of Magical Mystery Mix, which usually... Days of Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings. I can't keep track. Which goes out normally at 9 a.m. every Wednesday, but sometimes, you know, when there's a special event like this, or, you know, when I actually need to do my degree, it gets delayed. So make sure you follow me there at Days of Magical Mystery Mix to keep up with that. But for now, thanks so much for listening. And yeah, make sure you keep abreast with the show via my Instagram, or indeed follow me on whatever podcast platform is your favoured one of choice, I guess, because, hey, we're available on all of those too. I know, right? Anyway, enjoy. Thank you so much for watching. And yeah, go and watch Flow. Flow away to go and watch Flow, okay? All right. Love you lots. Bye.